Welcome to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm going to be your host this evening as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience, coming at you from the great forest, deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to have you back, and it's great to be back after a long hiatus, longer than usual. I'm happy to be rejoined by Lindsay Stark and Louis Galindo here on our next episode on our series about the Rune Walk. Today, we're going to be talking about Valkyrie Hilt, Hagalas, and Naudis are the runes we're going to be talking about. And these happened a little while ago. They're a couple months ago. So we had to, you know, just go through our notes and just refresh our memories. How are y'all doing this evening?
I'm good. Doing well.
Hanging in. As boys know, I am in post-COVID recovery. So drinking tea and hoping to not cough at the massive, you know, 3,000 listeners that we're going to have to this podcast, not coughing in their ears all night.
Yeah. Yep. Junebug, if she pipes up, she'll get a good following too.
It's, remember, I mean, she's...
Follow Junebug on Twitter.
Yeah, it's true.
Observed.
Yeah, so this is the beginning of the second Et. This is known as Hagal's Et. And this is when we really start to get into the Norns. This is when, for us, we really started getting into a lot of the weird, timey-wimey aspects of the cosmology that's represented by these runes. Time travel, non-locality, non-causality, multiverse stuff. This all started coming on really strong, and it's not super surprising because the first three runes of this Et, Hagal, Naudis, and Issa, are often interpreted, and especially by Freya Aswin and Leaves of Yggdrasil, as the three Nords, Urd, Skuld, and Verdandi. And we've been calling to these Norns. Every time we do this ritual, every time we call a new Valkyrie, every time we proceed a journey, we have been calling to the three Norns, these primordial witches, these ancestors of magic who are responsible for weaving our fates. You can think of them a lot like the Greek fates. There's a lot of parallels here, and we'll get into some of that because I have some ideas about that, and I'm sure you guys will too. But yeah, thank you for grabbing your book because we can get into some of the poems. So without further ado, you know, I think we'll get into a lot of the meat as we talk about these runes, as we talk about these journeys, as I share some about my automatic writings, we can get into a lot of that. Lindsay or Louis, whichever one of you, do you want to read the poem for Hagal? Hagalas.
Yeah, I can go ahead and do that. So Hagal or Hagalas is usually translated as hail and is the H sound. So the Norwegian rune poem for it is Hagal, hail is the coldest of grain. Christ created the world of old. Get a little the flow in from the influx of Christianity there. The Icelandic rune poem, hail is cold grain and shower of sleet and sickness of serpents. And then the Anglo-Saxon rune poem says, hail is the whitest of grain. It is whirled from the vault of heaven and is tossed about by gusts of wind, and then it melts into water. So all of these, you know, obviously have that through line of the grain, the seed, that image for what a hailstone is.
seem to recall there were a lot of hailstorms around the country at this time. This was in the middle of, right dead in the middle of summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
July 10th, I think it started.
Didn't you get some hail-kissed peaches?
Yes, Lindsay? It was particularly fun. I went into my local co-op in the middle of Hagalaz, and they had a display of these bags of what were labeled as hail-kissed peaches, which were a peach harvest that had been, you know, dinged by hail enough that the peaches didn't look as nice, but they still tasted good. Yeah, when we think of, you know, hailstorms, they are often associated with that. The summertime, certainly in the Northern Hemisphere, you get this sort of weird influx of, spring and summer, these bursts of weird ass weather. And it really is like a super weird phenomenon. And, you know, when you're thinking about the peaches, I mean, obviously for any sort of agrarian population, a hailstorm could be, extremely destructive to the food stores for the coming winter if it beats up stuff enough that you don't end up with, you know, just ugly food, but actually destroyed food.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just weird because at the southern part of the United States where we kind of hang out, the temperatures are well into the 90s and triple digits by this time of the year, and it seems just so bizarre that there's ice falling when it's 100 degrees.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, too, to note that it's something incredibly destructive to the crops, but it's made of the things that the crops need.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you have this battering, destructive force, this tearing, ripping, pounding, and then it melts and becomes water. And so, like, no matter how bad the hailstorm is, it's watering the earth. And so I resist often this thing of like, well, the tower card's good because it needed to be changed. And like, that is in a sense true. Obviously, like, you know, the tower does collapse, right? Eventually, the tower's going to collapse. Eventually, everything has to come to an end. But there is also, like, you can't diminish the destruction of the tower. You know what I mean? Like we have to sit with the difficulty of that, too. Like, we can't just shirk that aside and say, oh, but it's a positive card. It's like, oh, you know, Saturn is there to teach you. It's like, yeah, but Saturn teaches you through hardships.
Right.
And to diminish the hardships is actually to diminish the lessons.
Yes. That's right. I remember saying in the Discord when we first started, I was reading ahead, and like, Hagalaz sounds a lot like the tower card. And, you know, the tower is raised. It's not taken apart, you know, floor by floor. It's destroyed. And people falling out of the building, out of the windows of the building, right? So it's an upheaval. It's a violent, oftentimes, upheaval.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's good medicine in recognizing that, you know, destruction is necessary for creation, but that doesn't make it any easier,
right,
or less traumatic. I think oftentimes there's a tendency to black and white things in the space of like, okay, either it's bad or it's good. And it's like, what if it's kind of both? Like, it sucks when you go through it, but then you're better on the other side. I think it's interesting to see how people perceive Hagalaz. There's some people who really see it as like, oh, that's the worst one. You know, it's like, it's between sort of Hagalaz and maybe Thursaz is like the most negative runes that you can get in a reading. And it's like, is it negative though? Or is it, you know, it's complicated. Like, you don't necessarily want to see it happen if you're in a good place, but if you're in a bad place, that disruption is maybe positive.
Yeah, it's just like,
it's very context-based.
This too shall pass, right? It's like, if you're a king, mm-hmm, that's a great omen of ill. But if you're a pauper in serious hardship, that's a hopeful sentence. It just depends on where you're looking at it from.
Yep.
I like that.
And the Saturnian components of it can't, they're hard to escape, right? Because Saturn gets a bad rap for these very reasons, but it can be a very positive planet, and that energy can produce great benefit and great growth if you learn your lesson, right? If you learn you got to learn the lesson.
Instruct me harder, Daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the lesson too is like a gratitude thing, and like,
yeah,
I get into some of that with Nautis as well. But like, these are two, to me, these are foundational truths about our universe. Like, whatever reality exists on other levels, like the level that we're experiencing at this moment is a material plane where you have to eat things that are alive in order to continue to be alive. Right? Like, we have to eat something. We have to kill something. We have to eat it. We have needs, nowadays. We have hunger. We have thirst. And we have forces like hail, destructive things. You know, we're all made of matter that has gone through multiple stages of dissolution and reforging, right? Like, I mean, all this is from the death of a star at some point. This constant cycle, you know, we go back to the dirt, and then the dirt grows plants, and then it gives forth new life. And then we get to live again because nothing ever goes away. And that's what these mean to me. But in the process of it, it's gritty. It's real. It is the material experience that we're in. And so that is made of these difficulties, and especially the people, you know, I think it's easy to romanticize the time that the people that really developed these runes were living in, but like, dude, you just knew like five people that didn't have certain limbs because it got too cold. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah.
Like real shit.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering about the hail kissed peaches, right? Because it's so uncanny that it happened at that time. And like, these are now magical peaches, right? Because of the time that they happened. And if you are in this current that we are all in, and you know, things keep getting stranger and stranger, then that's got to mean that these peaches were somehow blessed by this current, they are a manifestation of living this current out, into letting it unfold into itself.
And that way, aren't we all hail-kissed peaches?
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, the beautiful thing about it is, I remember, you know, when you think back, this all flowed, you know, after Wunyo. And the big message I think that a lot of us got during Wunyo was to feel joy in what is good, and not focus on the perfect, you know, not letting the perfect be the enemy of the good, right? And I mean, what is a better example of that than a beautiful southern hail-kissed peach, a peach that is perfectly delicious with an external, you know, a perceived blemish, but it still has that like exquisite nature that is a peach in the southern summer.
Which places it in time. That places it in the time, right? Like,
yeah.
It is this, it's like the beautiful dichotomy of what the summer is. It's like we said, these hailstorms that come out of nowhere, this excessive heat, but it also yields these beautiful fruits that we get to enjoy.
And it's somehow even more beautiful and more perfect that it's been kissed by hail.
It's like the scars, yeah. The scars on the body of your lover, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They tell the story.
Yeah. It's really good.
So I want to get into now one of the other concepts that kept coming up. And so we had fire seeds earlier on. I think it was during like Kina's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This idea of fire seeds. And now we get ice seeds, which is like also another, it's kind of a kenning or another word for hail. but this idea of Hagal is the whitest grain. And I'll tell you this, maybe it was just swimming around in my subconscious because I've read all these rune poems before, but I don't remember them by heart by any means. And I kind of don't try to preload myself with any of the stuff until after we've done the first journey. I will read all the passages again from all the books that I have about them. And in my journey, we go to hell, right? H-E-L, not H-E double hockey sticks. The O-G. And and the denizens of hell come out of their dwellings and start harvesting this white wheat, this white grain. And I didn't even think about that at the time. I'm just like, oh yeah, that's weird. Move on to the next thing. But then I read the rune poem later and it's like, hail is the whitest grain. I'm like, holy shit. So the dead were harvesting these. And I just like this idea of ice seeds, you know, because it's kind of like what we've been talking about, where these hardships are the seeds of often our greatest triumphs. Because it's like you said, the hail-kissed peach is somehow more beautiful than the perfect peach. Well, like the person who has endured hardships and still has their smile, still has their heart, still has their life. That's a beautiful thing. And these are the kind of things that grow from ice seeds.
Yeah. I've known people like that, that I've met that have had terrible things happen to them and have been just put through the thresher of life, and they have no bitterness and no, they're in gratitude all the time, and they have a certain glow about them. That kind of reminds me of what you're talking about, and that, like, man, how do you do that? How did you do that? Yeah.
I think it is how you do that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Like, I almost think you, not that like, because I also struggle a lot with the idea that anything good has to come from suffering. I don't think that's necessarily true. But I do think that there's a seed there, right, that can grow. It doesn't always grow.
Yeah.
You know, and when it does, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Acceptance is the answer to all of my problems today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But tomorrow I have different problems.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. But for real.
Accept them all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do remember we had a lot of, you know, kind of accepting the fact that, like, just because it's productive doesn't mean it's easy. I'm remembering there was a lot of, like, shitty stuff during the Hagalaz. I remember my first Hagalaz journey. It was like I had like incredibly intense cramps, was like in a lot of pain, and then laid down, and the imagery the whole time was just like, hey, imagine all of your bones breaking like in brittle cold. And that was it. I didn't get anything else in the journey. It was just like, hey, you want to experience something that sucks? Let's do this. I was like, man, that was brutal. And then I know that Tim, you had some like actual, you know, sort of outside of the imaginal illness stuff come on as well, right?
Well, talk about COVID. I had COVID during Hagal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, just before we started recording, we had kind of this interesting through line between Hagal and Algis and the COVID that I had during Hagal, and now you had it during Algis, and we'll get into that maybe some.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, I do want to get a little bit into the possible healing aspects of Hagal. But before that, I do also want to read some of my first journey, because it's on topic of this. And it was like a full-on dialogue. Like, it was like very cinematic. So, because I mentioned, you know, we went to tell over the bridge, you know, Modgud, Garmer, all the guardians let us through. And we go into the court of hell. And she looks like a frost giant or a dark elf or both. You know, she's often depicted as half alive and half dead. But in this case, in my spirit vision, she was like striped like a tiger. And the stripes were dead. And then the other part of her skin was like alive. So it wasn't like just a half and half. It was like a stratified all over her body. She had antlers and her skin was pale blue. Balder was in her court and she welcomed us in and said, "You've come without a horse." And then I said, "We came with wings," and Hildr made her presence known. There was some banter, but then she welcomed us in and asked us to sit by the fire and hear Balder sing. His song was beautiful, but sad. And as he sang, icicles fell from the ceiling. She laughed and told us that we cannot have him back. Others have tried, but the whole world has not yet wept for Balder. And this is the idea that when the whole world weeps for Balder, Ragnarok can finally come. The world can finally be reborn. But not until the whole world weeps will this happen. So I told her we weren't there for Balder and that we were there to learn of Hagal. And she got a kick out of that and said, "You want to know? I will show you." She placed a hand on our foreheads and the rune appeared there in ice. So then I'm shown these scenes of slaughter, destruction, full-scale murder, overthrow, bludgeoning, tearing, death. She said, "Do you know how much violence it took to bring the order of the Aesir? The oceans were filled by blood and the mountains struck into place with dismemberment. The hail of Hagal is the frozen tears of the giant race. These are ice seeds. And the ice seeds of Odin are corpses cold in the ground." And then I saw Thor slaughtering whole halls of giants, bashing their heads in. It was brutal, and it racked my body. During the journey, I was like shaking. I had goosebumps. So I'm feeling like a loss of innocence, something you can't unsee, can't unwitness. So the feeling I had immediately after this was this, like, holy shit, you know, like, this is the other side of the coin, right? Because you hear, you know, it's a very, I don't want to call it, it's like Aesir propaganda, right? Like, history is written by the winner. So you hear about, like, the Aesir brought order to the Nine Realms. Like, they, you know, overthrew the giants and finally put walls up and there was dominion. And but then, you know, from the giants' point of view, this was like a genocide, right? Like a terrible thing. The ice tears of the giants being the ice seeds that birthed the world, you know, like, and it just makes, you know, it makes you think that, I don't know, it was something I couldn't, it was like a loss of innocence. Like I just said, it was like seeing something that you can't unsee, right? Like Thor is often just murdering giants. And I think this is, to me, this was like a point of initiation that I had to pass through. It's like, if you really want to understand the runes, if you really want to understand what this is, you have to see it from the other side too. You have to see it from the side of the defeated. You have to see it from the side of the scary ones, the bad guys, you know, like, you have to be able to see that. And you can't edit it. You can't whitewash it. You can't but gild it, you know, like, you have to see it and understand. And even Odin is in on that shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like something he's really trying to hide. It's like, you have to know.
Yeah. I remember this is a microcosm, what I'm about to say, of what you're talking about, is that I've been putting off getting any kind of health testing done, including the dentist, including, you know, getting blood work and colonoscopy, and I had a shoulder injury, and I promised my wife, I was like, I'm gonna do it. And it fell right at this time where I went to the doctor because I knew I had to know, right? I had to there's not knowing, and at my age and demographic and family history, this is foolish to do, right? So I bit the bullet, and I was very scared, and I went and got all the blood work done. I went to the dentist, and I started doing, I had a shoulder injury for quite some time, and I started doing physical therapy. I went to get an x-ray, and I did all these things. So I was like, it was getting over that wall of fear and not knowing into the knowing. And I had to know in spite of what the results were going to be. And luckily enough, everything was fine. And I did have a tendonitis, which was the worst news I got, right? Which was pretty good. So I had to do physical therapy, but the getting over that fear and the knowing, getting into the knowing was similar to what you're talking. Reminds me of what you're talking about. You either do or you don't, right? You have to know. You have to be on the other side of that. You have to be in some kind of certainty about yourself. And to do so is folly. To do otherwise is folly, and it's your own. You're just putting yourself in more danger.
Damn, I feel personally attacked because I haven't done any of that shit either.
Well,
no, it's good. I need to do it. That's inspiring, actually. I will talk later.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the knowing. I have to see. It's like when you're poor and you're fucking have to check your bank account, and you're like, oh, God, you know, you don't want to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
An inventory, you know, has to be done at some point. Yeah. And, so that did make me, I wanted to say that before we got onto some of the healing stuff, because so I think it's the idea that like any, I like the dichotomy of like the curse and the protection, like the healing and the smiting, like, because to understand one is to understand the other. Mm. And so my second journey had a man who was like, and this was like when I had COVID or like, yeah, like I think during it, I don't think I knew I had COVID yet, but I knew I was sick. And in the journey, like I saw one of my ancestors who had like a fever and was like, you know, in a really bad way. And the people of the village took him and fucking buried him in a snowdrift. And it was like, this is the healing of Hagal. That there is a hidden healing aspect to this rune.
Yeah.
And I found that really interesting. And it was so almost simplistic in its presentation. I was like, yeah, okay, just like with Kinas, we talked about this, where it's like the fever is your body trying to expel whatever virus or bacteria or whatever, right? It's trying to fight it. So the ice that can sometimes kill you is able to heal you in a specific circumstance if the fever gets too hot.
Yeah.
Keep it from eating your brain away.
Yeah.
To speak very scientifically.
Yeah. Hey, I hate when the fever starts eating my brain away.
You can become you can attain very high government positions with that.
Clearance. You get pretty high level clearance with that.
Yeah. Cool. Bone breaking. Okay. What else we got here on the list?
I had something in one of the journeys was, says here, I was sitting in front of a tent on its frozen plain. Hild was at the entrance. She had dark hair, bright eyes. I entered the tent and saw a fire with men sitting in a circle around it. She cut my head off and she placed it next to the fire and all were gazing at me, at my head. And then I was sitting by the fire with my head reattached. And she seemed to know my question was, why did you do that? And she answered before I asked it. And she said, that was the past. And then my wife and dogs came in, and it sort of took me out of it. But it didn't feel like she was saying, like, forget the past. It was like what happened was in the past, and that you must let it go, I guess, was the overall feeling I got from it. So another sense, in a sense, another sort of psychic healing, right? Moving beyond the fear, moving beyond trauma or whatever I was working on at the time with my therapist. I'm always working on something, right? And it's always mitigating trauma response and triggers. So probably that's what that was.
Interestingly, there's another traditional interpretation of Hagal, which is like karmic debts.
Mm.
And also like very real debts coming due, like things that happen since it's Urt, since it's what was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It represents like coming to terms with the consequences of past actions.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's another thing where it's like, I can either let that destroy me or I can let that fucking elevate me. This is what Valkyries help us do, is to help us these hardships to always elevate us. And that's something we can actually ask the Valkyries to help us with. Help this hardship to elevate me above what I was before, not for it to tear me down and pull me down into the morass of negativity and doubt and fear.
Yeah.
These Valkyries can pull us up like we're in quicksand, right out. I've had it happen recently where I've been negative and I asked them, please pull me up, help me to see, give me the perspective that I need to see. And it comes.
Yeah. Wow.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I want to also talk about the idea of the hag, the witch. You know, since we're getting into the Norns, since we're talking about Gullveig a lot, I'm going to be talking about Gullveig a lot at least. This primordial witch, this first witch ancestor, right, who birthed in my interpretation of the writings, birthed the three Norns when she was burned alive in the Hall of Har, another name for Odin, and was reborn three times. And so we get the three Norns. And from what the Valkyries have told me, we also get the Valkyries from that. We also get time from that. So that's a lot to unpack. And I've been kind of slowly unpacking. It's my own personal experience, my UPG of this cosmology. It's very Gullveig-centric, but it means it's witch-centric. And that the primordial event that birthed our time, and that really, it's the first war of the world. So in this cosmology really was a foundational element of the world that we live in. If we look at Hagal as the ice seeds of the destruction that birthed creation, this would be the event, this giant Aesir Vanir War or the Aesir Giant War. To me, those are the same thing because they're really all giants, but we can get into genealogies and stuff of gods, but they're all related to the giants. Just like in Greek mythology, you know, they're the children of Titans. Same idea. So we have these old ones. And the war, you know, begins with Gullveig. So she stands at the epicenter of our time, is what the Valkyries told me. Anyway, so it all begins with the burning of this primordial witch, and she becomes Heidr, the bright one. And everything in the mythos unfolds from that, and it all leads to Ragnarok. And that is, again, like this karmic debt coming due. Or not even, it may be too negative to see it as a debt or to see it as bad karma. It is just, it is like the cause and effect. It's just like dropping a rock and seeing a ripple. It's just, it is the way that things have to unfold. But so Hagal, like the word that we have for hag comes from this word. And so we have this idea of the curse. But again, she can also be a healer. She can also heal. And this brings me to some of the connections that I've made between Gulbeg and Hecate. And it's really interesting that it's like something I didn't realize at the time. I was working heavily with Hecate, and then all of a sudden we started this rune walk, and I veered completely in the other direction and haven't really, in my estimation, it's like I haven't been with Hecate. But then there are moments where I'm like, oh, I'm very much still with Hecate. Like, this is what I'm supposed to be learning. In the same way that Odin will do this sometimes, is he'll send you on missions and you're like, Odin hasn't been around for a while, but like, I'm learning this stuff, and then I'm going to take it back to him, and then we're going to integrate it in what I've been learning. So it's like side quests. But it's funny because the automatic writings that I do in a book that I started as a Hecate journal. And so in the front of it, it's titled Hecate. And I'm doing the Valkyrie writings in it. So it's like doing Valkyrie magic on a Hecate altar. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah. I think there's just so many similarities, because in these journeys, I keep seeing blood droplets that hit the ground. And as they hit the ground, a Valkyrie screams out of the earth.
Yeah.
And this really parallels the Erinis, the Furies, which in a similar way, is it from Uranos blood that they come, or is that Venus? I'm thinking of, anyway, but they're similarly born from like the blood of a god hitting the ground and the Furies come out. Like, someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's my memory of it.
I got something connected to that, because at this time the Deep Non fell towards the end of Hoggle, and when I did my usual Deep Non on New Moon, the Gorgo appeared immediately, and they've never done that before. And I wrote about it in the Discord, and I wrote, the Gorgons showed up in a very powerful way, and this has never happened, and it was very intense. I had chills as I was typing it. I brought it up here because we've all been talking about our magics, all of our magics getting sort of a turbocharge at the same time, because we all assume it's because of what we're doing. I'm fully convinced of that. And what I'm wondering is the Valkyrie energy that we're all saturated with, was that what brought the Gorgo out because they sensed it, or was it just the uptick in magical energy and that's what brought them to the fore? Because that was, I'm glad you brought that up, because that happened at the same time for me. So really interesting.
It's very interesting to me. I find it to be so compelling. So I did look it up. It is, so the Erinis, according to Hesiod, were born from the blood that fell to the earth when Cronus castrated Uranus. So it's like, again, it's like Titanomachy, this giant war that exists across different mythologies, birthing these beings from the blood of gods when they fall to the earth. So it's like the sky and the earth meet, and these beings fly out. And what the Erinis do is punish oath breakers. It's very like, and you know, as we know about Norse cosmology, is the oath is very important. So it's like these vengeance beings, and then we have these battle maidens who, you know, there's something there, but you can't put your finger on it, you know? It's like, yeah, just enough for it to be a mystery.
Right.
And so again, you know, so we have Hecate wearing Cronus chains as her diadem, according to the PGM, Hymn to Selene. And so that's always kind of seemed to me like Hecate has dominion over time, being the moon, right? Since she is Selene, she has dominion over the time on the earth as the moon. And so again, this is mirrors Gulbeg for me, and the moon stuff. Lindsay, I know we could talk about that.
Yeah.
Like the importance of menstruation to this whole thing. Like it's about that.
That basically I'm like operating on a level above all y'all just because I get the cycles. And you guys are just learning what the women know.
Yes, we're okay. And I will say this, anyone that's listening, if anyone is, if you're a man that's doing this, you're going to be having a tougher time doing this because you are stealing fire. If you're a woman that's doing this, it's like coming home. It's like your initiation, right? And I can't even say that, but like I'm speaking from what it seems to be to me.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically the message we got during Perthro, which I look forward to talking about.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Later.
That's going to be a good one. I don't have as much to say about that one, but I just know that this time. So like, I'm so excited about this. This is...
No, it's amazing.
I love this so much. And it's just so fun to be able to do this ritual and share it. I can't think of anything else. Maybe I'm tooting our own horn, but I just can't think of anything else that's done this where you... Like even the... You know, where have you gotten to follow along in a year-long ritual with people, you know, and listen to the experience as it unfolds? I don't think I've ever gotten to do it. I mean, I've done it like in private forums with people, but not like in a public forum.
Yeah, same here. Yeah,
sure.
Anyway, you know, just saying we're doing something pretty cool. So that's so much on Hagal. That's almost an hour worth of Hagal, which is great. Let's get on to Naltis. Which is, again, another super fun rune.
Yeah.
Lindsay, do you want to read us the poems?
I will read us the poems. Let me pull that up. So, now the or need. Why is it not going to the right page? There we go. So, the letter N or need. So in the Norwegian rune poem, we have constraint gives scant choice. A naked man is chilled by the frost. The Icelandic rune poem, constraint, grief of the thrall maid and state of oppression and toilsome work. And finally, the Anglo-Saxon rune poem, trouble is oppressive to the heart, yet often it proves a source of help and salvation to the children of men. To everyone who heeds it betimes. So obviously that last one is focusing a little bit more on the positive. It's very, the Anglo-Saxon rune poem has some white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, you know, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, guys. The need will spur you to good action.
There's no clarity of purpose like dying of hunger.
It's true.
You know what you need in that situation, but
yeah,
this one is just overall negative for me. Even my journey here was like, Hiltr was like, fuck this place.
Yeah, it was very interesting that you got that. I had the same experience where Hilda showed up for me more visibly than she, you know, in Hagalas, she didn't show herself at all. And in Naudis, she was like, hey, what's up? And she was kind of wearing like bear skin, badger skin. And she seemed like vaguely annoyed. Like, how come I got stuck with these like shitty runes? Other people get fun runes. So she sort of felt like she was like doing her time of like, okay, I got the, you know, the HR duties, of dealing with this, which was really funny. But even though the, you know, she was not necessarily super into it, the message was overall kind of, it was, for me, an exploration in how, basically exactly what you said, like the clarity of like nothing gives you clarity like fear of dying of hunger. And for me, it was Hildr poking me to say that I'm compared to certainly many of my fellow humans in this lifetime and my ancestors, I'm in like pretty good spot. Like I have enough food to eat, and not just enough food, but like good quality food. I have shelter. I'm warm. I'm cared for. Like I'm in a relatively, like not just physically safe, but like emotionally and otherwise safe space. But it didn't feel like a, you know, hey, check your privilege, girly, but more like a moment to acknowledge the liberation you get from being in that position of power and comfort. And that I think I remember I was dealing with some stressful stuff related to my day job at that time, and feeling really anxious that like I'm going to be out of work and it's going to be bad, and but like ultimately I'm in a position like I have some savings, I'm okay. And she was sort of reminding me, like, you don't need to operate from fear. You can operate from power. You don't really have need the way that many people have need. And it was sort of a sense of gratitude. And then to use that to, like, operate more skillfully in the world. And I think that the need, like, what is need and what is desire was a big piece of that for me, which I know popped up for some other folks.
Yeah. And I think often that my desires often run counter to like fulfilling my needs. Like I know for me, something that happened during this one was like, this guy at work really pissed me off, you know? And I had like, you know, like sometimes you just want to like slap someone. I had.
Yes.
I'm just going to be vague because I think some people from work are like, realize I have this podcast, but I had those thoughts, you know what I mean? Like, fuck this guy. And like, I had to like think about like that momentary desire would like take food out of my mouth, you know? And it's just like it's just an example of like sometimes the things we really want in that moment are not the best thing to meet our material needs. And honestly, the thing that came through for me was like, the more need you have, the less power you have. The more your material circumstances are, like the better your material circumstances, the less you can be manipulated. It's like a sovereignty thing. And so one of the images I got was like, and so one of the ideas of nowadays is the need fire. That's a ritual they used to do when they were experiencing famine or drought or times of great need. They would ritually light this need fire and call the blessings of the gods to show, hey, look, we're really in need right now. And so the need fire is lit by rubbing two sticks together. It is that archetypal image of like, all we have to light our fire is two sticks.
Yeah.
You know, when you say, I don't have two pennies to rub together, that is nowadays. So this idea of rubbing two sticks together to make this fire, and something they told me was sometimes the need fire is the fire lit below the Lord's hall who keeps his people weak at need. You know, chew on that one in these times, right?
No. I had a journey that was sort of connected to that, right? It says here, I was with Hildr and a clearing. The three Norns were there, but they were trees, right? And their spirits were inside of these trees. And Hildr was at the fire. She had a small cauldron, and she said that she was rendering my wants and needs, and that she was cooking in a way what I wanted, and my needs were what was left. And she served it to me like in a bowl, like stew. And it was delicious, and I could feel it fortifying me with strength. And I was eating this food, the content of my needs, and I was told it would keep me strong. And Skuld, in her tree form, gave me a branch in the shape of Naudis. Urd and Verdandi did the same. They told me to go deep into the forest and plant them. I did so, and when the third branch was planted, everything around me was vibrating at a much higher level. I wrote that it was like a frequency being tuned, and that it was sort of like a leveling up of frequency, like elevating me to a higher level of vibration or frequency through the planting of these three branches. And after eating this food that was my need, and I went back to the clearing, and everything was gone, and I was alone. And that's how I knew it was over. But the idea of rendering the want, right, and burning that away, leaving only the need, which was to fuel my strength.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that was a good
one. Knowing what I need. Again, it's like that knowing, like that really taking a look and seeing what it is that I need versus what I don't really need. And it's okay to want things that I don't need, but to know which is useful. And I'm going to be much better at getting things I want if I have taken care of the things that I need. If I'm doing magic to get like fucking cars and mansions and shit or whatever people do, I don't know what people do.
No.
But I'm like not taking care of like the material needs of my life, it's going to be a lot harder. I don't know. And so one of the things that was, I actually used this and it worked. And I think it came from one of the examples in Call of the Runes, where it's like I carve nine needs on one of the ancient examples of Nautis used in magic. And I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to use that. And I used it for something that I wanted. And when I did this spell, the statement, I surrounded it with nine Nautis. And this is kind of like saying, like, this is kind of where we can bend it, right? Because this is the point where it's like, I know what I want. This is what I want. Now I'm going to show you that I need it. And my showing you that I need it when I light this need fire is going to make it come to pass. So it's kind of like, I don't know if it's like a sneaky thing. It's kind of like a PGM trickery thing where it's like, this is something that I want so bad that I need it. I surround it with Naudis to show this, and then I ask the gods for it.
No.
And it worked pretty quickly. A lot quicker than it should have, I actually learned later on. But anyway, so it's useful to see that, but then it's also useful sometimes to bend it a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, and I did need this thing, you know what I mean? But like, it's like the God bribery stuff with the PGM, man. It really makes me think about it. Like,
yeah. I was having this conversation the other day, like with, about, you know, it's when you start doing magic, it's for that stuff that you want. Right. And then you grow into just trying to be more expansive, more your true self, more power comes, power takes on a different dynamic. It takes on a different meaning, and how you become more powerful is by doing what you're saying, right? Taking care of those, the need, and you find that it comes easier. There's a path of least resistance by doing this kind of work, right? by being in gratitude, by doing the right things, by being in right relation to everything and everyone as much as possible, by tuning your frequency higher, as I was shown, these things become more, they come with less effort, right? At least that's certainly been my experience. We talked a lot about everybody's different other magics getting turbocharged, and I think it's interwoven into that same conversation. Think, pretty sure.
I also had a weird fingernail thing. I had Nautes as the mast of Naglfar, which is the ship that Loki sails, that's populated by the dead, like armies of the dead, and he sails in at Ragnarok. And it is, Naglfar is made of the fingernails of the dead. It's a ship made of fingernails. Oh. Now, there's also another fingernail thing with Nautes, where in the sagas, Sigurd is told to draw Nautes on his fingernails for protection. Also, during this rune walk, I used to fucking bite and pick my fingernails, and they were like in terrible, atrocious shape, and I'd always be in pain. And I've since stopped doing that. It's been a lifelong thing that I never thought I would stop doing. It was like, I can quit smoking, but I can't quit this.
Wow.
You know? And that's healed.
That's cool.
It's interesting. And so, like, there's this interesting connection. And so one of the things that I'll read a little bit from my automatic writing with Hilt about this, and she uses some of this imagery. I said, "What can you tell me of the runes Hagalas and Nautes?" She said, "This is the proving ground of your journey. Remember when you hiked through snow and hail and pulled the knife on your friend? True story. It's like that. The needs that master us show us who we truly are. The hail tears away the flesh and lays bare the soul stirring beneath. But do not be filled with despair. See how far you have come, how kind and loving and truthful you have become in your need. These constraints you feel are the bones of Midgard. Find gratitude in them, and they will flow out and become abundance. Remember how great a teacher your need for alcohol was, how you said you'd never forget because of the Hagalas that the bottle, pipe, and pill brought into your life. The gratitude you now have for that experience, how you'd really never know if you hadn't clawed everything you could from that desperate need with your fingernails, like one in a coffin who drowns in dirt." And that's true in my experience, you know? That need that I had for drugs and alcohol has become one of the greatest teachers of my life. And I wouldn't have learned any of that if I hadn't gone full bore into it, 100%. Scraping everything I could out of that. You know?
Absolutely.
Carpet surfing. At 4 a.m, trying to pick drugs out of the carpet with your fingernails, you know?
Well, yeah.
There's this fingernail thing, like, when we need something, we want to claw it. I don't know. I think that's what it is. That's what it... What pings for me.
Yeah, you'll, like, grab onto it and shred it if you have to keep it from...
Yes. Yeah.
That makes perfect sense to me. Yeah.
So there's some cool imagery there. But anyone, if you put Nautes on your fingernails for protection and it works, let us know. Because it sounds like some cool magic.
I want to try that.
So any more Nautes stuff? I have a lot here, but I think I've covered a lot of it. Addiction, lessons from hardship. I think it's what's really cool about this sequence is, like, you have the hardship, and it shows you the need. Like, they work together. They work in concert like that. And then if I have the gratitude to see, I can move on and move forward with that.
I'm just remembering I had a really bad time at work during this. We had just started summer school. And we're doing practice testing for the ACT. And the kids are there, it's first day, and none of the kids have the right book, the test book. They have the book from last year. So they were sent the wrong books, and we couldn't move ahead with the lesson because the teachers had the new book. So we had to scramble and create a lesson from the books that they had while the other books were being reshipped by Amazon. And we didn't open the box of the kids' books until the day of, because we didn't think that they would get the wrong year sent to them. And so we had to scramble, and it felt like the world was falling apart because the kids already have ADHD and ADD and don't want to be there. And it's 8 o'clock in the morning and it's summer. And it felt, it was such an overwhelming sense of chaos that we had to take a break. We had just like, everybody just, you know, go grab a snack, give us 20 minutes so we can figure this out. And, you know, in the long run, it wasn't anything to really worry about. But as a teacher, not being prepared with a lesson plan of this magnitude felt like the end of the world.
Yeah, it's like a nightmare.
Yeah,
like, literally.
Yeah, two other teachers were there, and we were all trying to come up with the best idea to move forward. And it was, I'd only had half a cup of coffee or something, and. I wanted desperately to be anywhere but where I was. And I remember writing about it in the Discord, and there was just one version of chaos. Like, my mom's car, we were trying to get my mom's AC fixed, and she didn't have her vehicle because she can't drive in Texas heat in the summer without an air conditioner because she might fall out. And so one of the places we took it, the guy decided to shut down his business like the day that we got my mother's car fixed. And the dude just skipped town, and my mom's car wasn't fixed, and I had already paid this guy like $500 to get my mom's AC fixed. And there we were left with no recourse, and it was just one chaotic thing after another.
Yeah, dude. Nowadays is not having car AC in the South of the United States. That's a good
for real. being the ice ruins that we're experiencing in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so I actually had fire for nowadays, which is kind of interesting. She was like, this rune is made of fire. I think it's not traditionally necessarily seen that way, but I definitely had it. It's fiery. Speaking of naughties, I need to pee, so I'll be right back.
Why? Why is the pee speaking of naughties? That was funny.
You know. Needs come in all sorts of different ways. Needs,
right. That's right. That's
yeah.
A need. Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure a need.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I think that's sort of the wisdom of nowadays, similar to how Hagalaz can feel like, oh, it's traumatic, it's tough, but it's like, oh, but you also get the lesson of like change toward more beneficial places. And it's like with nowadays, it's like, well, need sucks, but also you're like, okay, well, not wedding, I'm not like in a intense place of suffering right now. Most of my basic needs are met.
Right.
You know, we can, but I'm just, you know, I'm toxically optimistic at all times.
That's so good. Yeah, like I knew my mom. There were plenty of people around my mom to get her to the grocery store and to take her places she needed to go. But like we know, you know, not having an AC in this part of the world is in the summer is that's a need. That's not a want.
Yeah.
You gotta have that.
That's absolutely a need.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking back of how chaotic that time was. It was pretty wacky.
Yeah, yeah, it was brutal for me too.
Yeah, I would say so far it was one of the toughest periods of the walk for me was the Hagalas Nowadays.
You know, she called it the proving ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an initiation point, I think.
Right.
Yeah. When it is also, you know, the beginning of the second eight, so it was sort of starting a new cycle. Okay, you've made it through the first third of this. We're taking you into this next time period.
Yeah. Where things get real weird.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see more of it as we talk about the next ones. Cool. So were we cool to talk about Hildr for a little bit?
I think so.
So, to talk a little bit about Hildr in the mythology, for one thing, her name means battle. And a lot of kennings have her name in it. And it's mentioned a lot, but it's never really quite clear if it's like, she may be the personification of battle, right? Like, when it's talking about battle, it's also talking about her, because it's hard to tell sometimes which they're mentioning. Like if they're actually talking about the Valkyrie or they're talking about battle itself, it's like there's a very blurry distinction between the two. She's also attested in the Prose Edda as Hogni's daughter and Hedin's wife. And it said that she had the power to revive the dead in battlefields, and she uses that power to maintain like this constant battle that lasts until Ragnarok. It's really interesting. But we also have another Valkyrie who is like described as like someone's daughter, like a living person who also seems to have supernatural powers and kind of becomes one of these mighty dead ancestors, really. What were our impressions of Hildr?
Well, they said for me, she was grumpy.
All business. Pretty much, pretty straightforward. No, yeah, angular. No soft edges there.
She was like very, she looked like a berserker to me.
Mm.
Like really rugged. So here's what she said when I asked her about herself in my automatic writing session. I said, "What can you tell me about yourself?" She said, "I am battle, but not all battles are fought with armies. There isn't always a clear foe, but we dive in anyway. Laughter on our faces, the songs on our lips, no regret in our hearts. Our fate is woven, but we still have to do it ourselves. No one can do it for you. Not gods, nor goddesses, nor ancestors, nor Alfar, nor Disir. But there is help, and you must but call, and thunder will fill the sky as we ride. I always come. I crave the fight and the test. Call me when you feel your hardship overwhelm you. Say my name and wield my sword." So she's very steadfast in her desire to help us, but also her desire to fight, to be there. And to me, that's like almost like, whenever there's a fight, you are invoking her, whether you know it or not. So why not do it intentionally, you know?
Yeah.
There was some more stuff I had about her from my first journey. Let me pull that up real quick. Yeah, she spoke with it was crazy. Like when she spoke, it was like the sound of clashing armies. Like her voice sounded like swords and hitting shields. She arrived like a missile. Bam, she hit the ground. She had four wings and was decked out in bearskins. She looked like a berserker. She had a hammer. And when she talked, it was like the clashing of blades and shields and the screams of warriors. A blade came from her mouth and pierced my hand, and the blood from it I rubbed on the plinth in the form of Hagal.
Yeah, another interesting thing I got from her in some of these journeys and writings, the Valkyries have given us names, and sometimes those names are private, but the one that she gave me in this one was Fylkja, which was not a word that I knew, and I went and looked it up, and it means like to draw up in battle array, to like draw up a phalanx. So it's like the gathering of warriors, which again has been sort of this ongoing theme that this is like building the stores of something for Ragnarok to be like the side of the good guys and to bring up the ancestors into the battle. So it was kind of a sick name to be given, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
it's dope.
Very so. I'd written that I was having some difficulty connecting a lot with her. And my wife had done some energy work on me and said that there were definitely runes in my field. Like she could see the runes, and that there was definite like Valkyrie imprint there. So I mentioned that I was going to try and connect again and bring her a special offering next time. So I remember re-blooding my rune and bringing, I sort of doubled up the rum and smoke when I came next time. And I said I added the Farmagnuter mantra to journey preparation. I did 108 mantras of her name. And then the journey started pretty easily. And that's when the journey I mentioned earlier, when the Norns took on the form of trees, that was the journey after bringing the special offerings to Hildr. So it did work out in the end.
Anything else we want to say about her?
No, I think she kind of wanted to be a little bit behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's interesting how that happens sometimes. Cool. Is there anything else we want to talk about these runes? I think we covered just about everything.
Yeah.
Guys, remember, if this is interesting to you, we have a Discord where we discuss all this stuff as we're doing it, coming on, bringing our thoughts, bringing our ideas as they come. So it's not just this podcast. We're also doing this in real time. If you're interested and joining us in this rune walk, we've had some people join us since we started. But if you're interested in joining us, patreon.com/nightbirdradio, $3 a month. You get access to the Discord. You get my private Patreon posts, of course, as well as my public ones. All my automatic writing from these Valkyries that I do. And you get to join us on this amazing experience. So we invite you to come along if this is something that's interesting to you, or, you know, if it's something that you know a lot about or know nothing about. You can start it at any time. You can jump in with us. You can start it from very first rune. You can start it from Fehu. You can start it from Algies. You know, whatever works. There's not time bound to anything. And as long as you do all the runes, you're doing it. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter what order you do it in. You don't even have to do them all. But what I'm saying is, you can start it in 10 years. You can start it right now.
Yeah, it's a powerful current to be swimming in for sure. It's been nothing but there's been nothing but benefits and growth in this time. And I can't recommend it enough. It's been just great in every way.
The Valkyries seem to be, they seem to be saying like they're coming forward now more than ever. And I don't know if it's just because of the state of our world or the time that we're in or where we are in the cycle, but it's like, it's Valkyrie time.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Thank you guys so much for coming on and for doing this with me. It's always a pleasure to do this. I love these. And I look forward to the next one.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thanks, y'all. Have a good one.
Have a good one. Thank you.